if you are managing HIV in most cases mm-hmm. as a chronic illness now, and if many of the services are the kind that someone could get in a hospital, a clinic, a medical care center of almost any kind, does it raise the question of whether Aid Atlanta and other organizations like it have in a way been the victims of their own success, that you might not need those standalone institutions anymore?
It does, and it's being asked. I mean, Washington, our legislators in Washington are asking that question, especially in light of Obamacare. I mean, does it necessarily still have to exist in light of the ACA? Because
and ACA patients, is the Affordable Care Act.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. So we're all living in the shadows of that question. And so this past year, do you have an answer to it yet? No, we don't. If you are an ACO, an ASO, an AIDS service organization, and you have not begun to look at your own transformation, you should start looking at that now, because in a couple of years, you will have to look different or you will not be around. And so Aid Atlanta, thank God that we started that process last year, and we started to look at how do we diversify ourselves, not just because we want to destigmatize HIV, we want the disease to look like any other chronic illness, but we also need to sustain. We're a 33-year organization that really needs to stand on our own 2 feet.
It's a blunt question, though. What would be the need for Aid Atlanta anymore in an era when the stigma isn't what it was? It's probably not disappeared, but is not what it was. And also, a lot of the providers in the general sort of healthcare realm have been aware for years of how to treat some of the complications of AIDS.
Well, I disagree that the stigma is not still around.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to imply it was gone.
Yeah, okay. No. I mean, here in Atlanta, we still have organizations that refuse to treat people with HIV, so they will refer them to us or to Grady Infectious Disease Program or those programs that are deemed as AIDS clinics. And so our thought here at Aid Atlanta, as we're looking at our model, is that if we begin to expand our services to provide all primary care, that it doesn't matter who's sitting right next to you. It could be an HIV patient. It could be a diabetic. It could be a heart patient, a cardiology patient, a pregnant woman, or what have you. You don't know. But they're just receiving primary care.
Turning to Obamacare.
Yes.
The state is trying to move HIV-positive patients who don't have full-blown AIDS, as I understand it, to Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
But does that leave a lot of single men who are a big part of the HIV-positive population in a difficult position because they can't qualify for Medicaid and yet they need the kinds of treatments that we have now?
Many levels to the question. The bigger problem that we have with Obamacare is not just the access. Access is easy. You can sign on. You receive your premium cost. In most cases, a lot of the patients that we treat here cannot meet the cost of the premiums. Now, there are programs through Ryan White and through some of the HIV programs through the city and through the county that are helping them pay for some of those premiums. But then comes those very high deductibles. And then comes the tiered drugs, that the tiers in which the HIV drugs are in within each of the plans. And they have all
really complicated.
Becomes very complicated. And so we feel and we have a movement in some states like Florida have sued the insurance commissioner, and I think the state of Georgia is moving towards that direction. We certainly have taken it to Congress.
The goal here is to get more people covered for those drugs under Obamacare and lower the deductibles.
Because most of our patients live under the federal poverty level, and they cannot afford it.
So does that mean that there are a lot of particularly single men who don't have full-blown AIDS who are falling through the cracks?
Even those with full-blown AIDS I mean, there are many people with full-blown AIDS that still are not approved for Medicare or disability for some reason, and we still have to cover them under Ryan White.
So are we going to see organizations like Aid Atlanta, individuals, taking the state to court over this?
There's currently a group of individuals who are working with the Harvard Law Project in considering our options here in the state of Georgia, similarly to how they did in Louisiana and how they are doing in Florida.
Where are you with the state on that at this point?
We haven't interacted with the state yet. We're in a stage where we're working with the Harvard Law Project, and we're supposed to be receiving some feedback from them. We had some interns here do some work and some interns in some other organizations, and we've submitted that to them, and they're supposed to be synthesizing that and getting that back to us in the next couple of weeks.
Someone from the state might say, look, you know, we are already facing exploding costs for health care in the state budget. How could we afford to do this as well?
We've seen in those states who have, you know, who have elected expansion of Medicaid, we have actually seen reduction of cost in health care. And that has been proven in New York. It's been proven in Pennsylvania. It's been proven in California.
But part of the reason for that success is that for now, the feds are picking up a good chunk of the costs.
Correct.
And the fear among state officials is a few years out, that goes away. And the state could be on the hook for very high bills down the road.
But when you look at the state of New York, the savings that they have made reinvestments. In the event of that happening, they have just reinvested it back into their own coffers so that they are safe and secured for that in the event that that does happen.
I wanted to take a look for a moment at where we are in the AIDS battle. A few decades ago, this was a death sentence. Then came the time when there were therapies that gradually got more and more, I don't want to use the word comfortable, but less burdensome. And there was a sense among some of the advocates at the time that people were getting complacent. Is that still true? Are we seeing younger people with higher rates of infection because they weren't around in the 80s? They didn't have the horrible evidence of what AIDS could do to you right in front of them all the time.
Absolutely. We've had, I can't give you the specific number, but in 2014, we had the highest rate of young people come back with positive HIV tests than we've had in years here at Aid Atlanta. And we know across the country, between the ages of 13 and 24, there has been over a 20 to 30% increase of HIV infection in that particular population.
Is that because younger people are, they don't, again, don't have those lessons of history and they're engaging in riskier behavior, or are there other reasons?
I think they don't have the history. They didn't see what you and I saw, you know, in that era. And I also think they see, you know, someone like Magic Johnson, like, you know, he looks healthy, he's a multimillionaire, you know, everything looks great. And there's also this element of, you know, they're coming, get tested, and if you're positive, there are drugs out there that would keep you living forever. And when you open a magazine, you know, you know, and they're promoting an HIV product, you see this very healthy looking person, and so it's sometimes we have been our own kind of enemy. And overall, I think prevention dollars have been cut so dramatically, and we have so medicalized HIV prevention. Like nowadays, every grant that we write for prevention is tied back to medical. So if you are not part of a medical environment and you're doing prevention, you won't survive.
At a time when you're having to reimagine how an organization like Aid Atlanta functions, could you find yourself not going all the way back to the 80s, but facing demands that you haven't had to face in a while and for which you've had to adjust?
No, we are going back to the 80s. I mean, we are in that space. And I'm sorry to say that, but we are here in Atlanta. We have rates here in Atlanta of HIV that are higher than in sub-Sahara Africa. We have rates of HIV infection in the United States, in pockets of the United States, that are higher than in Africa. There are more success rates of prevention of HIV in areas of Africa than there are here in the United States. And so for us, our concern is that every year prevention dollars get cut. The good thing is we now have this new tool in our arsenal of prevention, which is called PrEP. Now an HIV negative person has an ability to take a pill every single day and also use that as his or her arsenal to prevent HIV. But it has to be taken every day right now, and it's a way to prevent HIV from transmitting from a person who is positive, that may not know their viral load, that may not know that they're even infected, and protecting the person who's negative. So because of that, I think we're now moving more towards a biomedical form of prevention until we find that vaccine.
What's your guess as to where we'll be 5 years from now in the fight against what is still, for some people, a killer?
I really don't think that we're going to be in that different of a space. I think medically will be different. I think that the access will be different. I don't think that in terms of incidence, we're going to be any different. And until we start fixing the issues of work access, education, poverty, transportation access, etc., that's not going to change. Because it's not, you know, HIV is not just a sexual disease. It's a disease of environment. It's a disease of a social, you know, it's more of a social stigma disease than anything else. So once we start fixing what's around it, it's when we will start seeing decreases in the virus by itself.
Dr. Jose Rodriguez-Diaz, Director of AIDS Atlanta, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.